Welcome to The Network Effect, hosted by Access FinTech. We are proud to present Season 2, which will host investors, partners, clients, and guests from within the industry. Today we have Kevin Marcus, who is a partner at WestCap, who is a VC for Access FinTech. We also have our very own Roy Sadon. We discuss tough conversations as CEOs, as investors, and what companies need to do to succeed. We start by asking Kevin what he has seen in terms of trends in the financial market and what makes and breaks companies.
Yeah, you know, there are quite a few. I mean, I think in the shorter term, I think there's a nice correction going on here. It may be painful in the early stages, but where investors really put value on companies who can operate and show a path to profitability and operate in an efficient manner. And so if I look back at the trends in investing, you know, say 5 years prior, for the 5 years prior, it was kind of growth at all costs, and therefore not a very discerning investor marketplace. I think now investors have woken up to the idea that you actually need to kind of be able to prove a path to profitability, you know, understand unit economics, and really operate with focus and operate, you know, again, with a highly efficient focus. That's as it relates to, you know, some, you know, one change we're in the midst of right now as it relates to the broader investing community, particularly on the private investing side. More broadly, what we see is the continued automation of process and structure, and it becomes more acute in a tough market environment, which is, you know, I think where we're headed for AFT's clients. It's one of the things we actually forecast and we're excited about is, in our experience, while you have a certain period of shock where the clients and customers kind of freeze for a bit, on the other end of it, in a kind of tighter environment, they tend to look for ways in which they can improve process, typically leveraging technology and automation. And so I see more and more of this emphasis around understanding how to improve inefficient manual processes, and a broader drive towards automation, especially as it relates to kind of old and frankly, I think relatively outdated processes, that, you know, again, probably are identified internally at the banks as kind of needing improvement, but hadn't gotten the focus of the banks because they were so focused on the kind of growth. So that definitely is one major trend. And I think we're seeing kind of broadly technology not only pull those banks along, but also being guided by the need for that kind of automation and this kind of next phase of technical advance. So that's, you know, definitely a big step forward. So I think, you know, in answer to your question, it's in really much more discerning investors driving having a keener focus on operating efficiency. I think it's more this continued push to automation, but taking that to the next level and continually identifying manual processes. I think those will play out over the next few years. I also think, you know, some of the reticence to the kind of collaboration that Access FinTech enables can be overcome with you know, continued advances in the security and insecurity and the advancement of the tech overall.
Yeah, I'll that with a 2 cents on my side. We definitely, I mean, we're a microcosmos of kind of the ecosystem that Kevin spoke about. We looked at data and specifically data collaboration as one of those places to harness the inefficiencies and extract them out. We specifically focused on inefficiencies and what I call the supply chain, inefficiencies between organizations that are dependent on each other, sometimes compete, sometimes service, but the data gets distributed together with that, and it's hard to make decisions. The smartest decisions are going to be based on the best data that's available. And I'm saying data with a caveat. I don't want to talk about people will automatically make the jump. Oh, data means AI, and AI is going to be automatic decision-making. There's such a massive gap between getting better decisions with better data and then extracting that last bit of intelligence using AI, because there's a linear ability to extract, and then there's that extrapolation when you apply the systemic decision-making. We looked at data collaboration. I think data collaboration is a massive space. When we started, we had to explain a bit about what it is. The data umbrella has got all kinds of infrastructures, and you can start creating subcategories in data collaboration. But we were looking at data collaboration as a way of creating efficiencies across organizations. And it's kind of one of those topics that are very much, how does data drive better decisions? How does data drive better decision outside of my four walls is something that we keep running into. And we're just at the beginning of this. So this is a trend that will continue to evolve, and there's going to be more intelligence and more technology poured into that space.
And Joe, I'll ask my own questions here too. I'll take the liberty. That data collaboration point is just spot on. And one of the things that, you know, struck us as we evaluated the Access FinTech opportunity is just how far along Access FinTech had gone to build trust to drive that data collaboration. Having been in and around the financial services and financial technology space, particularly in capital markets over the last, you know, say 30 years where I've spent my career, there are very few examples of where the banks had trusted a partner to drive that data collaboration. I can say that actually Ipreo did get there to an extent around new issuance and managing kind of new issuance process. But to have gotten so far so quickly in building that trust with the banks, that's a huge asset and really a testament to the Access FinTech team and really personally. That trust is not given easily, and it is a major advantage and frankly competitive barrier to entry. So I think it's important to call that out.
During the tough financial times over the last few years, how have you seen founders and companies react?
Yeah, look, times of turmoil always present opportunity. And so what you look to do in our shoes is, the keep your wits about you while everybody else panics, right? And so look for opportunities that come, from panic. And there are some of our best investments were made as other investors backed away from term sheets, pulled back on capital. We do a lot of, first of all, we talk about the experience we have operating. I can tell you in my experience that the greatest gains we made at any business I've ever run have been through times of turmoil. That's when companies are made. It's when great businesses are made, when you have the opportunity, and the will to go kind of right when everybody else is going left. A contrarian view is what makes, winning businesses and also winning investors. And so we certainly understand the short-term disruption and what that meant, for example, from an operating perspective, cash flow, cash needs, et cetera. And we made sure that our companies were well-financed and had the ability to grow on the back of whenever, this short-term panic ended. So I think in some, we looked at it as an opportunity. We thought the kind of long-term ideas and the thesis we had behind various investments hadn't changed. But again, it presented opportunity to grab share for our portfolio companies to put more capital in at the right time into the right companies. So I look at all these as kind of opportunities if you have the courage of your conviction.
We've discussed on the podcast before, Roy, about not only Access FinTech being fit for Westcap, but how important is it to find the right investors for the company?
It's a good question. When we went into our Series C, we were kind of asking ourselves, what do we look for in a partner? Because, and I use the word partner on purpose, it's not just, in the same way that Kevin referred, it's not just the cash injection, it's a partner in building a business. And we focused on two things. We wanted investors who understood what we were building in the context of it being a network and a data play. So the understanding of what a network is, it's got its own DNA and its own life cycle, and it's not necessarily the technology, but the building of a company, of a network company. We wanted value add so we can have and lean on the experience of people who have done it and also can speak the same language. What came as a massive plus, and we didn't have it as a condition up front, at least our own, you know, not that I say that we were the only choosers of the investment, but what came as a massive plus was the operator's background, which for me made a massive difference in the conversation. Having a discussion with people who have built and went through the trials and tribulations and the ups and the downs of building not just technology and not just software, but software in capital markets, understanding the buyer behavior and the dynamics of this ecosystem. And, you know, especially when I look at the volatility of the market and the number of the financial catastrophes that seem to be coming at a quicker pace and a higher volatility, doing this and crossing that together with a partner who operated was a phenomenal differentiator. So I would say, you know, Kevin, that in that conversation, we spoke about having a mutual understanding on the first meeting. I could feel that what we are going through, you've been through, it's a journey you've crossed, and the ability to lean on that experience was, again, it was a really significant. And my analogy is always that, you know, companies at our stage, it's like raising children. Suddenly you realize that the trousers are too short and you have to change the wardrobe, but, you know, suddenly none of the trousers fit. The step functions, right? And the step functions are quite dramatic. And you can either be caught off guard, or with the support and the insights from experience, you prepare for them and you almost preempt them, or you promote them, or you even accelerate those activities. We spend a lot of time with the board, and specifically with Kevin, talking about company structure, talking about what are the upcoming challenges. For me, it's always, you know, again, second time entrepreneur, got scars on my back, don't want to make the same mistakes again. But the focus that we had was for a specific certain size of company and a specific experience. With Kevin's experience, we have a longer trajectory, you know, bigger company that was built, different activities. It really is about preparation for the next phase, identifying those bottlenecks and addressing them. For us right now, bottlenecks is removing the internal friction for growth and focusing on identifying them early. One of them is just kind of scaling up the organization that we have. Not always easy conversations, just to make sure it's not an easy walk in the park. Otherwise, I guess everyone would do it. But these are thoughtful, experience-driven conversations that, you know, leave us thinking and preparing us for the actions that we have, not to be caught off guard.
How many of those tough conversations have you had, Kevin?
The reality is, actually, that I don't think they're hard conversations, because we have a really receptive audience. And I will say that part of the screening we do before we put money in is to make sure the team we're backing understands the need to scale and evolve. And so I feel like while there may not be agreement at every point on every item, broadly, we're kind of locked arms in the understanding that the business needs to scale and grow. It really is one of the hardest things to do in business, is to take something that's working and break it. You know, I think terrible companies never recognize when something's going wrong, or they recognize it too late and still don't change. Mediocre companies can react to changing dynamics and fix things. And great companies actually proactively break their model before things head the wrong way, with a recognition of where they're going and what needs to change ahead of time. And so the whole idea here is, let's be that great company and take a business that was working and working well, and actually get ahead of the curve by evolving and changing before something breaks. And so that's kind of what we had agreed to do, I think, when we put capital in. And so I don't think there are hard discussions. Some of the, at a macro level, I think, you know, clearly some of the details, you know, there's going to be different views and different experiences. And then really, again, it is about, you know, kind of, you know, collaboration for our on our end, right? We're in the business of kind of leveraging our experience, and there's a pattern recognition. Investors like us can go too far if we have this hubris to think that, oh, boy, I understand your business because I've seen something like it before. No, I'm never going to understand the business as well as the team at Access FinTech. And so my job is to trust that the team understands their business exceptionally well and use that pattern recognition to make suggestions and collaborate to bring both that kind of broader experience together with the unique experiences and detail that the management team has in running Access FinTech.
I want to reiterate something that Kevin said. I'm hoping that the audience includes other entrepreneurs.
Well,
and other entrepreneurs are going to go through, I mean, entrepreneurs are often younger in experience and haven't seen this. And a lot of them are going to be scared by the markets and the market corrections and what they've done. And I just want to reiterate, when you see the turmoil in the market, I wholeheartedly agree. It creates opportunity, but you have to think creatively, and you have to think about how does this become tailwind and not headwind. And you're not going to suddenly reinvent the company completely, but the tweaks in the positioning, in the value and understanding, what do we really bring to the market are important. So, you know, there's going to be moments that founders are going to be scared and nervous, but I would just encourage, hopefully you've got the right investors who will sit down with you and figure out what it is. But the journey is there. It's just understanding how your value changed in these activities. Often your value is going to be accelerated and heightened if you know how to also just be the vote of confidence to entrepreneurs out there.
You know, I'd like to believe what we're doing alongside our portfolio companies is kind of leading the next generation of private equity investing, and that is partnership investing, or you know, operational equity, you know, those kinds of terms. The idea that again, we're working together to get through this scaling is exactly the way I think these things should work. You know, I go back to the beginning. The first thing we look for is great leadership and visionary founders. And that's what we've invested in. And then we partner alongside to help scale. And so we're as excited as, or maybe even more so, you know, now that we've gotten into the details on where Access FinTech is, what the opportunity is in front of it. And so, you know, for us, it really is just a matter of partnering well, looking for opportunities, and bringing some comfort to the, you know, usually uncomfortable experience of change and change management that inevitably has to occur as businesses scale.
Who does Westcap typically invest in, and what profiles do they look out for? Of course, you don't have favorites, do you?
Well, I'll start with the last part first. You know, for the record, like a good parent, we love all our children equally. So, you know, as it relates to other investments, and I think it even goes back to Ipreo, which is the company I help create and run. LT was an original investor and actually created the predecessor company Ideal when he was at Merrill. And so we as Westcap on our record go fairly far back to companies like Ipreo, Tradeweb, a company called iLevel that Ipreo wound up acquiring, but more recently and in our current portfolio, names like iCapital, ShareGain, Simon Markets, who I referenced earlier, Avenue One, some great kind of names in and around fintech. And, you know, as we look at patterns and the things we like to invest in, to be clear, we invest solely in asset light, tech-enabled marketplace businesses. So that's a bit of a mouthful, but particularly that marketplace or network affecting businesses. It takes a unique skill to build a network, to build a kind of marketplace or a network and that network effect. And, you know, thus the name of this podcast. You know, we obviously saw that at AFT, and we were immediately drawn to it. Some other actually similarities, or maybe similarities is the wrong word, some other patterns that we recognized. Ipreo, again, which I ran, was owned by a few of the banks. Simon Markets, where I was on the board, was owned by, you know, several banks. There is a unique structure, and there's some unique skills and tools needed to be able to manage that kind of ownership and board structure. It is a great positive and a huge advantage for AFT. But you know, again, the familiarity with that kind of structure also gave us a degree of comfort, and we look for that kind of complexity both in the board structure, but also in some of the operating models. That complexity plays to our favor because of our experience, you know, deep in and around the capital markets and capital markets infrastructure. So again, those are some of the names we invested in, but also some of the kind of patterns and types of profiles that we look for in the investments we make.
How did WestCap start, and what is their investment style?
Yeah, I'll start with this. WestCap prides ourselves on being different. So we are business builders and operators. We happen to use capital as a means to an end, and that end is building great businesses alongside founders. So we hear a vision, a direction, and we see the passion and the opportunity, and we leverage the need for capital as a means of going in and partnering to build great businesses. That's fundamentally what we do, and I think that's very different than what you'd normally find in the kind of broader private equity world. In fact, we coined the term operating equity as opposed to, say, growth equity or private equity, whatever other terms are used. And the whole idea behind what we do is to leverage our operating experience. Capital is commoditized. You know, there are so many firms out there that have capital and they're willing to throw it around. What is definitely a precious resource is the experience building businesses, and then particularly within, you know, specific domains. And so our founder is a guy by the name of Lawrence Tosi. He goes by LT. And LT has had a storied career in and around financial services, fintech, and more broadly, his most recent job before putting all his time into building WestCap was as CFO of Airbnb. So a storied career. And he saw, prior to that, also the CFO of Blackstone and took them public. So broad experience in private investing. And he saw a gap in the market. And that gap was helping businesses go from kind of great ideas and early growth to something at scale that is long-term, sustainable, and honoring the vision of the founders. And that was what he sold me on when he asked me to come join. And so, again, our mission, I think, is a bit different than traditional private equity in the sense of partnering to build great businesses, leveraging a broad team of experienced business builders. So again, a different mission. How we invest is we invest very narrowly. So instead of, say, taking capital and throwing it around to a broad array of companies, we lean in operationally. And so we invest in very few companies, relatively speaking. And we put, you know, our energy and our experience behind those companies to make sure we're doing everything we can in partnership and collaboration to help those companies succeed.
How did Access Fintech and WestCap start their relationship?
So we were actually introduced by Goldman Sachs. As it turns out, I was on the board of a company called Simon, along with some members of the Goldman investment team. And Goldman got a view of our operating model, the value we had when we make investments, and thought immediately of AFT, made the introduction to Roy. And then, if I'm not mistaken, Roy, we met in our WestCap's New York offices back in, I want to say it was kind of fall of 21.
Yeah, I'm going to corroborate everything you said. First of all, we met in the office just as we were moving out. So we were meeting amongst boxes and, you know, in a transition. So that was like, that was the first experience. But yeah, it was an introduction from Goman, who was our existing board member. You know, when we talk about value of investors and value of board members, that's kind of one of the classic things as we were looking to expand and getting to the growth phase, being introduced to potential growth investors is always a much better exercise than trying to do it yourself. And the strength of the relationship between Goldman and WestCap was just a great introduction call for us. Not that it made it easier, we had to go and do the whole process from scratch, but getting through a reference is always is a easier experience and a more friendly experience.
And I can tell you in that first meeting, at least I felt, you know, a kind of real kinship with Roy. You know, my background, I've spent my time building and operating businesses within capital markets tech. I was shocked that Roy and I, you know, after I kind of reviewed his background, that we hadn't met, given the kind of how many people we have in common and our kind of career paths and how they've, you know, come close to crossing, but not quite hadn't yet. But we were definitely singing from the same sheet. I understood the opportunity straight away, understood the challenges, the needs he had. And frankly, this is a big part of it. Got to know him straight away and said, this is somebody we want to partner with. And that was right out of the first meeting. Obviously, there's work that had to be done in understanding the business more deeply. But a lot of this, you know, starts with the personal. And, you know, it was just a really terrific, easy first meeting, at least from my end.
Yeah, we don't need you, Joe. We're just going to talk.
Yeah, I might as well go and get a coffee and leave you two to it. Where do you see the relationship with Access FinTech and WestCap moving forward?
Is this a promotional video? Because I think I feel like I'm only going to give, you know, good words to WestCap and to Kevin. So
you can take a dig at him if you really want.
Yeah. But then I get to go next. So you have to be careful. I'm just kidding.
That is true, Kevin. It's a two-way street here on Network Effect.
It was an interesting, you know, way to reflect about what the market was going through as we were doing the round, because we started the round when conversations about the corrections were just kind of back channels and, you know, maybe it won't happen. We were going through the process. We actually sat on three term sheets for the company, and suddenly the market reacted dramatically. The public market and the private market reacted dramatically to all the, you know, inflated valuations. And I'll give a dual compliment. We were definitely, I mean, we're a company that started by people who are, it's not the first time in the entrepreneurial cycle. So understanding that chasing that, you know, the heightened mid-cycle evaluation has got a lot of risk associated with it. But at the same time, Kevin's and the firm's deep understanding of what we were building and the actual real value and not the potential, the real material value that was here, was also had to be met by resolve to, we're in a process and we're thinking long-term and we're not reacting to the market changes. So it could easily have been around that would have just kind of, listen, you're great, but it's just the market's bad and we let's meet again. When we did our Series B, our Series B was meant to close during the COVID outbreak. But if anyone looks back at the charts, there were 3 weeks where the market absolutely tanked and everyone thought it was going to carry on forever. And then it went on a bull run that lasted 18 months. And we were meant to close literally in those 3 weeks. And that round evaporated. The market reaction then was more severe than it is right now, when no one could predict what a pandemic looks like in financial markets. But again, the experience and the commitment that Kevin and WestCap had to the process is just a complement to the cycle. But the other side of it was the transaction took a lot longer than it did because the market was changing and the kind of the conversation with other investors were changing and the risk management changed. So we were there for a long journey trying to make sure that the transaction reflects what is fair and amicable and appropriate to the time. But again, there could have been 1,000 reasons for an investor to say, you know what, I just don't know where the market's going and walk away from that. And there was commitment to the transaction. And not that I think it was a favor. I think we're a real viable business and it's great, but still, sometimes it's easier to just walk away than to stick to it.
I wanted to say thank you to Kevin and Roy who took the time out to speak to us. I hope that you enjoyed the first episode of season 2 and we have plenty more to come. As I said before, partners, clients and people from within the industry talking about current topics. So please watch out for episode 2. Thanks for listening to The Network Effect. Catch you next time.